Well, hello, everyone, and happy Thanksgiving week. It is a special episode of the Jason Wright Show because I have that blonde that you guys hear me talk about all the time, my little chef, my personal chef, the goose. Abby, what's up?
Hey, happy to be here.
welcome home for Thanksgiving. So she's at her endocrinologist appointment, and I'd send her a text and say, hey, I've got a great idea whenever you get home. And so, of course, she comes home, and she's like, so what's this great idea? I said, oh, you're going to be on the podcast. So how you feel?
Pretty good. Yeah, I thought he was going to say something like, oh, I have a movie for us to watch, or we can play a game or something. He said, nope, we're recording a podcast. So
This is much better. All right, so... So I figured since we're together, that we just, and you and I generally get together and we at least solve most of life's problems. The two of us are very philosophical, wouldn't you say?
This is true, yes.
Yeah. I mean, Ryland could tell us the best way to optimize the menu at Whataburger. Ryland could crush that. But you and I, when we get together, we talk about some pretty serious issues. We've had some of those talks since you've been home, and I thought it would be fun just to kind of riff here for the Jason Wright Show audience. Let's talk about books.
Okay.
That's one of our favorite topics.
Totally.
So what are you reading right now?
Right now I am reading, it's so random, but it's actually called, it's not the most philosophical choice, but it's called Santa in Montana by Janet Daly. She has written, like, I don't know how many, maybe like at least 50 novels, I would have to say. And they're all like basically like Hallmark Christmas movies put into books. And yeah, it's just a feel good holiday read. And I'm really excited about
it. Is Grandpa about to lose the Christmas tree farm? And she comes home from the big city to save it, the place that she couldn't wait to get out of and never wants to go back. But now she has to save everything.
Actually, it's the family's ranch. Ah. And this time it's the single granddaughter she's grown up. And the whole family's trying to look for her a husband. And they found this prestigious guy from Chicago who's coming into town. And they're trying to set them up. So kind of similar.
All right. So one of my favorite little things that we've ever gone off on is our Hallmark plots. And so listeners, I mean, Abby and I, on our way home from the airport the other night, we talked about how essentially every Hallmark movie is there's some major catastrophe, and all of a sudden, this family's entire life mm-hmm. revolves around whatever the issue is, right?
Yes, and it's all about saving Christmas. Christmas must be saved no matter what. Every Hallmark movie, if you just pay attention, you'll notice. It's all about Christmas being saved by some family, and yeah.
Yeah, and nothing. So like, we started coming up with cheesy plots. Like, I want to write a story where there's a Christmas tree farm that's been in the family three generations, and all of a sudden, there's like some weird beetle that has ascended upon Vermont. There's some small town in Vermont, and the grandson who left for New York to be an author, a lawyer, or he went to
prestigious publishing company,
or he went to Wall Street. Yes. You know, and he's never coming home. Hair slicked back, kind of like the son in The Family Stone. Yes. You know, he's like, you know, he just couldn't shake the dust of the pine dust off his feet quick enough. And then all of a sudden, he gets, now because it's Hallmark, he didn't get a phone call. He didn't get an email. He didn't get a text.
A letter.
He gets a letter from Grandpa. Yeah, because Grandpa still sends letters.
Yes.
So Grandpa sends him a letter from Vermont, and he sees it. He didn't even want to open it because it's a letter from Grandpa from Vermont. And he's like scared. He knows that
he's
something's
never going back there.
Yeah, no, he's never going back. And he knows that if he opens it, then he's going to be going back to the place he couldn't get away from fast enough. And so then he ends up having to go back home. And oh, lo and behold, his high school sweetheart's still there.
Yes, she works at the tree farm.
It's crazy.
Grandfather just hired her last month, and she's been helping out a lot.
And then, you know, they kind of have some, you know, some banter back and forth. And they kind of, like, they're kind of like siblings, you know, they tease mm-hmm. each other. Oh my gosh, you're here. How can you still be here? You know, what are you doing here?
Each making fun of the other he's making fun of her for just staying in town, staying local. She's making fun of him for being all hoity toity, going off to Wall Street. But there's kind of flirty back and forth, but they act all annoyed with each other.
Exactly. And then they go to some restaurant that she recommends in the little hometown, and he just starts downing it immediately. They're going to have a terrible wine. wine list. They probably have foie gras there. And she starts just riffing in French to the waiter, who happens to understand her, and he's blown away. This is as nice as any any Manhattan restaurant. What? What's going on? I mean, is this place Michelin rated? What?
He starts to realize that maybe this place isn't so bad after all.
Yeah, maybe everything he wanted was right under his nose the whole time.
Yes. Yes.
And then it's crazy. Then all of a sudden, as they talk over drinks,
they reminisce over one specific memory that happened back
when they were kids.
Yes.
When they were kids.
Yes, yes. When they were really little, and it happened on the tree farm, most likely.
Well, it's the day that she showed up because her mother had died.
Yes.
And basically, his grandfather adopted her. But not really. You know, her grandmother was still alive. Oh, ooh, and that's good. Because grandpa's a widow, and her grandmother was grandpa is a widower. Her grandma was a widow, and little to the grandson didn't know this, but while he was away, they had started dating.
Yes, and the girl doesn't want to say it to him yet.
Yeah, the grandparents had started dating, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, because if they were stepbrother and sister, that might be kind of weird, mm-hmm. but the fact that they might end up as step-grandchildren, that's still kind of creepy, but it's, you know, it's Vermont, and it's a Christmas tree farm, and it's Hallmark, so we're going to keep this clean.
Yeah, and the movie, it's not going to get long enough to where they get married or anything.
No.
They're just dating.
So. No, yeah, exactly. So anyway, and then lo and behold, he comes home, and he's happy. And, by the way, he was going to run for mayor of New York.
Oh, yes.
But he shifted those ambitions, and he is going to now run for mayor of Pollewoogoc, Vermont.
Yes, and do everything in his power to save the tree farm.
He
gives up all of his New York dreams because he realizes that the family business is more important, and that's what his calling in life is.
And he's able to stave off the evil developers who were going to put condos in this town of 1,200.
Yes.
They were going to put up the first ever high-rise condo at a ski lodge that was going to go, that the main slope was going to go right through the tree farm. And the town council was all in on it. There's one member of the town council whose brother-in-law just happened to be the chairman of the board of the development company. So he stood to prosper as well.
Yes, totally. And let's not forget that this ski resort running through the tree farm means that there will be no Christmas.
No.
There will be no Christmas.
You cannot have Christmas without Christmas trees. And there are no, I mean, and it was, it's just like, it is sacrilege to mm-hmm. have a fake Christmas tree in whatever I called it, Walla Walla, Vermont. It's not, they've got syrup and real Christmas trees.
Yes, yes. And it's all up to Justin. We'll call him Justin.
Justin.
It's all up to Justin to save Christmas.
Justin.
The whole town's counting on him.
Absolutely. And Haley, thank God Haley's there to kind of be that magnet that pulls him back home. Because Grandpa would never do that. Grandpa said, you know, you need to come home and just decide for yourself. And it took some real pushing from Haley's grandma to even get the letter written. As a matter of fact, Grandpa wrote the letter, and he didn't even send it. But it was Haley's grandma, Gladys, who actually put it in the mail.
Yes.
And here's the deal, too. The postman, who's 80 years old, has been delivering mail since he used to ride around on a horse to deliver mail in Walla Walla, Vermont. He's the one who sees the letter, and he kind of smiles, and he goes, "Don't worry, Gladys. I won't tell him." And he gets it into the mail. And then history's changed.
Yes.
Christmas is saved. So there you go, folks. If there's any screenwriters out there, you want to put the final touches on that and sell it to Hallmark, you're welcome.
Yeah, let us know.
So how are things in Boulder, Colorado? And all right, so tell me this. Whenever you come home, this is what I see whenever you come home. And some of the parents out there, you can probably relate to this. Your kids, they're happy to be away, right? You like being away from home.
Yeah.
You like home.
I do like home.
We nurture you pretty well when you're here.
Yeah, y'all are all right. But I do. I like being in Boulder.
But then when you come home, okay, let me ask you this. When you go to Boulder, do you feel like you're at home now in Boulder, and then when you come here, you're visiting, does it kind of flip-flop at some point? I mean, like to where, okay, you're here, you start to feel at home, and then you go to Boulder, and you feel like you're visiting Boulder, but then all of a sudden, home sets in. Kind of what's that like?
It's funny you ask, because I was actually having this conversation with two of my friends the other day. It's hard to say, because it's gotten to the point where, because for the longest time, it felt like, I mean, I was obviously, I loved being in Boulder, But coming home felt like coming home. But now it's like I've been there almost 3 years. Right. So it really has started to feel like home. So it's kind of like what you said. I go and I get settled in and then it feels like home.
Right.
Then I come here and it's not that it feels like I'm visiting, but I don't have all my stuff here. Mm-hmm. I am in, like, you know, I do have a suitcase. So that kind of feels a little bit weird. But after being home for a while, home sets in and then I go back to Boulder and then I have to get used to it again. And yeah, it's kind of both. It's hard to say which one. They both feel like home in different ways.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember, you know, so when I left to go to school, and I didn't go nearly as far away as you. I mean, I was 2.5 hours from where I grew up when I went to undergrad. And, but it was kind of the same way. It all this, I remember when it transitioned from, school is kind of like a second home, if you will, or a temporary home, to yes. where it became home. And then whenever I would go back to Sulphur Springs, that, because, you know, I mean, well, first of all, my room became a guest bedroom and, mm-hmm. you know, all the stuff got sold. Jennifer, your aunt, sold all my stuff in a garage sale. And it's like I died, not just gone to school. It's like I was out. It was like, well, remember Jason? Here, he's gone. Let's get rid of the artifacts.
Yes.
So I remember when that was the case. So, all right. So just scatter shooting all over the place. Let's go back to literature. All right. So you see these books I've got in front of me? I just recorded a video for the YouTube channel about this recommendation that I got from Stephen Hussey, the guy who, by the way, you know his brother, or,
yes.
right? You subscribe to their channel or
yes,
whatever?
Yes, I know who Matthew Hussey is. And when I saw that my dad was interviewing him or interviewing his brother, because I've heard of Stephen is his name, right?
Right.
Yes. And I was like, I've heard of both of them and I've watched both of their videos, but Matthew Moore like somehow came into my like page and I was subscribed to him. And I was like, I texted him. I was like, Dad, wait, I know who these guys are. Right. Like you interviewed them? That's awesome.
Yeah, it kind of made me feel good. And so Stephen, who is an Oxford scholar, which, you know, I said this, I think, on one of my, maybe I said on the podcast intro or something, but how would it be to be able to say, oh, yeah, I went to school where C.S. Lewis went.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that wouldn't suck.
No, not
and then,
at all.
I mean, then just, you just go down the list of Oxford luminaries. But anyway, and he's just the coolest guy. I told him on the podcast I was going to dub him the approachable intellectual. And he recommended this book to me, How to Read and Why. Mm. And this guy, Harold Bloom, was like the leading literary critic alive during his time. The guy's phenomenal. And one of the things I struggle with, I don't know about you, is knowing what to read.
Yes,
I
totally.
Mean, you know, you look, there's only, I've got all these books in these shelves and I've read most of them, not all of them. I've got probably a good 30 that I've never even read. And so what Harold Bloom does, two things that I think is really awesome, is he discusses what you should read. Like, if you're going to read Hemingway, who was basically, did you know that Hemingway, you probably know this because you're, you know, you do creative writing at school. That's your minor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. I guess I should know that. So, you know, Hemingway was mostly known for short stories.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I always just consider him like a great novelist. And I do know his novels are not very long. You know, mm-hmm. The Sun Also Rises and For Whom the Bell Tolls. And then, of course, well, The Sun Also Rises, I just read not too long ago. And then The Old Man and the Sea,
mm-hmm.
which is very short, mm-hmm. you know, almost mm-hmm. like a novella. But anyway, so he talks about short stories. Well, it just so happened at an estate sale. You might want to borrow this sometime. I got 200 years of great American short stories.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, what makes it really cool while I'm reading this book by Harold Bloom is that he will talk about a short story. For instance, he talks about this short story from Hemingway called The Mountains of Kilimanjaro.
Mm-hmm.
And he describes the characters, what's going on, and how it's written, why it's important. And then I went over to 200 years of great American short stories, and there it was.
Oh,
it was in there.
That's cool.
And so I read it. And so that's what I'm doing is I'm reading this book by Harold Bloom. And when and then I read one this morning. I want you to read this story. So have you ever read, and let me see here. What did I read this morning? Flannery O'Connor. You ever read any of her stuff? All right. So she was this lady that grew up Catholic, and her stories were almost like satire. They were kind of dark humor and made fun of holy rollers and Bible mm-hmm. beaters and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, actually, maybe, yeah, but see, she grew up, I think this is why she did it, I'm reading here, O'Connor's South is wildly Protestant, not the Protestantism of Europe, but of the indigenous American religion, which is kind of like we grew up, right? Mm-hmm. We're old Southern Baptists. So she, and And so she, as a Catholic, is probably able to make fun of the don't drink, don't dance crowd and mm-hmm. all that, the holy rollers, mm-hmm. like, which, you know, like we are, like we, even though we dance and, you know, I don't drink now, but I, you know, would certainly have the adult beverage back, you know, even though I was a good Baptist boy. Mm-hmm. So there's this story that he writes about called the, it was called The Misfit.
Uh-huh.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So, and this was written like years and years ago. So the grandmother, who's kind of like the matriarch of this family and kind of is just that typical kind of Southern, you know, just jump for Jesus every chance you get and everything's going to be okay. And no matter, you know, kind of like the bless her heart, you know, she yes. can, you know, if she's going to gossip about someone, as long as she puts bless your heart in front of it,
yep.
it's okay.
Then it's okay.
Well, what has happened is there has been this guy that escaped from prison, and he's called the Misfit, and he's horrible. He's like a horrible murderer. And she wants the family, or that they, the family wants to go to Florida, and she suggests they go to Tennessee, but they end up going to Florida, and she doesn't want to go to Florida because she's afraid they're going to run into this guy somehow. And so early on, very first of the story, you know what's going to happen. She foretells it. We're going to run into this. And it's, just, again, I think it's like, I don't know, maybe 7 pages. And they end up, sure enough, have a crash. The Misfit and two of his cohorts come upon him, and it is not pretty. And it's one of those stories kind of like a you never read or saw No Country for Old Men, did you?
No.
We talked about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, definitely, but okay. No, I haven't gotten around to reading it.
Here's what I like about Cormac McCarthy's books. First of all, they keep you on the edge of your seat the whole way, and what you want to happen doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, the happy ending is probably not going to come.
Yeah.
And that's what happens in this story. It's like, no way. Is this really going to happen? And it does, and it was cool. But I would never have read any of Flannery O'Connor's short stories, probably, because to me, when it comes to short stories, I'm thinking F. Scott Fitzgerald, mm-hmm. Hemingway, O. Henry.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that has been a lot of fun. So tell me, in your creative writing studies, what are some of the disciplines you're learning as to how to be a better writer? I mean, what is it that separates a good writer, a Faulkner, from some just mm-hmm. pulp trash writer? What is it that you found?
Well, it's a writing workshop class, so the main thing we focus on is we have like a writing assignment, and it's just fiction, so it was just pretty cool. It gives you a lot of room for leeway, where everyone in the class writes a 10 to 15 page story, and then we take turns each week workshopping two people's in the class's works, and we'll like people, like, there's, like, this website you go on where you post your story, and everyone in the class goes on there and makes comments, like, suggestions, edits, whatever, and then in class the next day we talk about it. And so it's very much, like, student-based. So what we've kind of been, like, common things that, like, a lot of people in our class say is, like, what you need to, like, look for things that to, like, in order to, like, fix your story, things that, like, take you out of the story. Like, say, it can be something as random as, like, a detail that doesn't really fit, or kind of like something that like doesn't really fit in with the time period that kind of makes the reader go, wait, what? Wait a minute. And you go back and have to read it again. We say like, oh, that kind of takes you out of the story. And that's one of the biggest takeaways I've learned from that class is like just staying like really consistent with like, you know, the time period, the language you're using, staying a big one. I mean, this is just a very obvious basic writing thing, but is giving characters their own voice, like giving characters different voices if you have multiple characters, because it can be really hard to you know, write two completely different characters because it's all you. So you have to come up with, you know, different voices and keep them consistent throughout the story. And that's something I've really taken away from the class.
That's one of the things that I really took away from that book I gave you, Chuck Palahniuk's Consider This, is that no two people walk into the same room.
Yes.
A Wall Street lawyer walking into a bar is different than a plumber walking into a bar. The totally. Same bar, but completely different perceptions of what's going on and reactions to everything, right?
Yes, exactly. And like you know, it's not just about describing them like in order to get to know their personalities. It's like you have to be really creative in how you show, like, you know, how a character like responds to a certain situation. Yes. Tells you a lot about their personality. And like one character is going to respond totally different than another. And that's how You let the reader be able to tell the difference between characters without telling them, oh, here's a different character. It's almost like the reader needs to be able to just hear different voices in their head.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that because it's one of the things I really struggle with when I'm trying to write is dialogue. When you get in the flow of dialogue, it's fun because you just, you can truly imagine these two imaginary figures having a conversation. But when you're trying to contrive it, it's like, I feel like I'm having to said John, then John said, right? Because
we've actually talked about the tagline said quite a bit. And it's funny because it's pretty, the class is kind of divided on it. People have really strong opinions about the word said. Some people are saying, oh my God, stop using it so much. You know, use it once every five dialogue tags or whatever. And other people are like, oh no, said is a writer's best friend. It just, you have to like be careful with where you place it. And like, you know, again, it's like if it works, if the dialogue itself is strong enough and you just want the little said thing to be quick, then you can use said. But if it, you know, helps the line to say like exclaimed or whatever, then right, use that. But it just depends on the situation.
Yeah. Because so I guess that to be really good, because I'm asking you literally kind of teach your dad something here. So what I should be trying to do is make it so that even though they're quotes, there's people speaking in first person, that I don't have to tell the reader, Abby is now speaking. I can just based on what is being said, people know, oh, that's Abby speaking. And that can be, can that be like, because there is something that, like Scotty P from Meet the Millers, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Well, we know that Scotty P saying, and it's Jason Sudeikis speaking whenever he's makes some kind of snide, sarcastic remarks. Yes, because I speak English and I can hear and I understand you. And I hear the words coming out of your mouth. So is that kind of like when writing is really done well is whenever you can actually not put said Abby or then Abby said, we just know because of what is being said.
Yeah, exactly. And it's very hard to do. So, I mean, definitely use said if you have to. If it makes it more clear for the reader, use it. But yes, if you get so good to where you can really tell, like, you know, when a character's talking just based on their voice, then that like shows that you've, you know, you're really good at writing dialogue. So yes, to put it shortly, yes.
All right. That's cool. That's good for me to know because like, as I try to write things, I love stuff. I love the, like we've talked about too, I like to read a book. And so listener, have you ever read a book? And whenever the author says something like she ran her tongue across the front of her teeth, then you actually run your tongue across the front of your teeth. That to me is really cool. Or like what we were talking about at dinner the other night, it was as acidic as a battery, putting your tongue on a 9-volt battery as a kid. But yet although it was biting, there was something about it that made you go back for a second touch.
Yes. It's just things like that, like descriptions that you wouldn't normally expect. Instead of just saying, oh, it was so acidic, it tasted like this. It's like you describe it in a way that everyone goes, wait a minute. You're like, ah, yes. Like immediately, you know, oh my gosh, I remember when I was a kid putting a battery in my mouth and having that specific taste. And that's not something that you know that you know. But when somebody says it, you're like, oh yeah, I totally have that memory. So that's a good one. And then one other thing that's cool that I actually learned in my one of my creative writing classes last year that I had never really considered, and this might be totally basic knowledge that every other writer knows but me, but we learned how to kind of use like lens when you're writing. It's almost like you're directing a movie. It's a good idea to sometimes, like when you're describing something, start out with a close-up image, like start describing the buttons on somebody's shirt and then you zoom out and then you kind of describe that first, and then you might describe what the character's doing, and then you might kind of back up the camera and just describe the scenery around, and you take the reader in like different places, like you go from close to far to close, you switch around the lens, I guess.
Yeah.
And you're writing, and that can make it like really interesting and engaging.
I love that. So what author at this point do you most identify with whenever you're writing?
Oh, that's a good question. The first person that comes to mind, I don't know if a lot of people, probably not your listeners, would know who she is, but her name is Jandy Nelson, and she wrote, it's called, I'm going blank. I'll Give You the Sun and The Sky's Everywhere. And those are two books that she wrote. She writes very I'm trying to think what the word is. It's like airy, kind of. It almost sounds like a dream. And I don't know if anybody listening knows what this is, but knows what synesthesia is. Have you ever heard of synesthesia?
Is it where you can taste words?
Yes. So basically it's where the definition of it is where two of your senses cross.
Okay.
So a lot of people have it. I know a lot of people in my creative writing class talk about it, because I think a lot of creative people sort of have it. It can be anything from like associating colors with words, like your brain, you know, every time you say the word dog, you think of the color red, or like if like letter or numbers, for example, like the number 8 reminds you of is the color purple in your mind, like every time. But for me, it's so weird. And it's funny that I'm talking about this, because I didn't really tell anybody about it for like 3 years, because I just thought it, or like till like 3 years ago, because I thought it was just normal and it didn't mean anything. But I Googled it and I was like, oh, this is an actual thing. For me, I associate different words with different like tastes, like as soon as I hear them. And that sounds so bizarre, but I looked it up and it's synesthesia is what it is. And, her style of writing kind of does that. Like, she describes things like in color. Like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, but she would say something like, like the girl, or she'll like say something like real, like dreamlike, kind of like if a girl's nervous, she'll just say her heart started exploding paint all over the room. But she won't say like that's a metaphor, but you just know it is, but you know, like what she means. I don't know if I explained that well, but she just is really creative and like super, like you feel like you're just reading a rainbow. Like, it's the coolest thing.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I feel like for somebody with synesthesia, or somebody who's at least interested in that kind of thing, like can totally like relate to her style of writing a lot more, because you see like she gets her descriptions from truly inside of her brain.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you can like feel it yourself, if that makes sense.
So do you enjoy what genre? Horror, romance, coming of age? I like coming of age.
I would say probably coming of age is my favorite. And I like a little bit of everything. I used to, like when I was younger, I liked romance books, but I never went for like just the full blown romance. I like for there to be some drama, some mystery element involved. I kind of like a combination of all of it. And lately I've been really liking kind of coming of age and just like family type books, like where there's just different family dynamics and like kind of complicated, you know, drama and history and things like that.
We've got to write about our crazy family. And I think that's what's fun, is because everybody will tell you every family is dysfunctional to a certain degree. Even the most perfect families are like those families that when you guys were kids, we grew up, they're the perfects, you know? And I think that we need to write some, because our family's pretty weird.
They are. And they're all hilarious in their own way.
They are. It is just a
a herd of characters.
Yeah, it is Misfit Island. I mean, we've got freaking birds swimming, fish flying, trains with square wheels. Yes. It's awesome. And, you know, I just think, like, it's kind of funny, you know, kind of disclosing things. So we used to laugh about how whenever your grandparents, BF and Ren, you know, Gigi and Grandpa BF divorced, and yet BF would still show up for Thanksgiving, you know, and now you got your mom shows
like
up.
Like father.
Yeah, your mom shows up for our Thanksgiving. Thank God, you know, Jemlyn's cool with that, you know, or she's invited. You know, she'll usually pop in. It's just, and then you've got the whole Sulphur Springs crowd that's just a big bag of awesome. Yes. It's just, we need to flesh that out. So, you know, my story I told you is I want to have like a surprise dinner party where all the branches of the grandparents, they all come, and you know, the ones that don't like each other, they don't know.
Yes, are we telling them that they're all going to be
there? No, no. We just think that they're like coming for a dinner, and they're going to show up, oh my God, and see people they haven't seen in 30 or 40 years since they were married to them or something.
Yes, I know. And I mean, we would have to film it. I mean,
absolutely.
This would be absolute gold. I don't think anyone listening can just fully comprehend the amount of gold that would happen if we did that, if we set up a camera and told everybody, oh, come on for, you know, get dinner
so
party.
Awkward.
Just so awkward. And we just, I mean, it's almost like I want to do it, but I think I would feel so awkward. I don't even know if I could be in there. I mean, the tension, you could cut with a knife. It would be so he's so awesome.
It would be. Yeah. Okay. Well, we need to do that. And then I think my favorite things to read right now, which it took me forever to read fiction. I did not realize, because here's the deal, and I guarantee you there's a lot of listeners out there that associate with this thought. Well, if I'm going to take the time to read, it has to be something important, mm-hmm. you know, valuable, like a biography mm-hmm. or something health related or leadership focused or James Clear's Atomic Habits, yes. you know. yeah, but and those are great, and that's the bulk of my library. But I have realized that there is so much value in what it does for your brain to have to create the pictures from the page as opposed to just have them fed to you on a screen. Mm-hmm. That's like, to me, that's push-ups for your brain.
Definitely. And that's kind of why I'm kind of the opposite as you. I find myself mostly reading fiction, and then I don't really want to go to something like a philosophical book or something where I can learn something, because for me, it's gotten to the point where I would rather read than watch TV. And so that's sort of my source of entertainment. I'm like, well, if I'm going to be entertained, I might as well be reading a book. I mean, that's good for you no matter what. Even if there's no profound lesson that comes out of it, it's like, you're right, push-ups for your brain. Yeah. And so, that's something I really do want to try to read more nonfiction, though. But it's kind of funny, we can help each other in that way. But
yeah, and all right, so let's just completely shift gears from the page to the screen, because... Mm-hmm. Listener, you have to know that Abby and I are very big on tradition.
Yes.
You need traditions. And part of that tradition is a slate of films that we watch every holiday season. Mm-hmm. We kicked it off last night. And for the regular listener, you know that Stephen Hussey, who is a Londoner and a native Brit, he referred to Love Actually as British porn for Americans, which I think is a pretty accurate description.
I do see what he means, but I absolutely love that movie, so I refuse to believe anything negative about it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the same way, and so that's what we always kick off the season with, so we got that. What's on the docket for tonight? Have you and Jemlyn decided?
We have not decided, but I've been pondering, thinking about maybe The Family Stone.
So good.
Yes. We could, or just any of the, we could dive in full on and go like Elf or The Santa Claus, but we might save those for Christmas break. I'm thinking The Family Stone for tonight.
Why is it that there's some movies like Elf, Christmas Vacation, possibly Scrooged, but for sure, Elf and Christmas Vacation and the Santa Claus movies.
Yes.
You can see bits and pieces of those 30 times throughout the holiday season, but yet The Family Stone, Love Actually, The Holiday, those you got to save up, savor one time, and then, not that I wouldn't watch and stop and want to watch The Holiday a second or third time if it's on, but I wonder why it is that those movies, I can, like, for me anyway, I want to see them, give them their place in the place, and give them a placeholder, watch it. But the others, dude, I could watch Elf 20 times.
Yeah, I know. That's true. I've never really thought of it like that. I guess because maybe Elf is just, or like those kind of movies, it's almost like they're so like kid-like almost maybe. That they're entertaining just to watch.
You don't have to get emotionally involved.
Yeah, you don't really have to get emotionally involved. It's like even just to have them on, like, there's always just something funny and random happening. You don't really have to keep up with the storyline to know exactly what's going on. So I guess that maybe that's kind of what it is. You can kind of have it on in passing and still, like, you know what's going on. And because it's one of those movies that, like, everybody knows, it's like you feel like you've watched the whole thing even if you've just been kind of, like, half paying attention, like, the whole time it's on.
I think that's one of the things that's so cool that, you know, that God knows that we do have our goofy family dynamics, but the cool thing about Christmas movies, my dad and I can go a whole year and not speak. I mean, we that hasn't happened this year. We've actually talked, but we can go a whole year. But you put us in a room watching Christmas Vacation, and we will laugh and watch it as though, there's two lines of thought here. And folks, if you don't do this, make a point to create these traditions, or if you do it, stop for a minute to savor it and be thankful that you have this. It's always cool for me that you put Frank Wright and I in a room watching Christmas Vacation. We'll, one, watch it like it's the first time we've ever seen it. And two, we will laugh like we're hearing the jokes for the first time and probably laugh even harder than we did when we heard it the first time.
Yes.
But you put us separately, we'll laugh. It's fun. But there's just something about being there with the people that get it and know the lines, and you feed off the laughter. That's one of the best parts of Christmas movies, I think.
Totally, yes. And especially with our family, and especially Christmas Vacation. I mean, that's just been, and we used to listen to that. Do you remember when we used to play that in the car with our little the Tahoe TV thing. Yeah. And that almost, I think, is what makes it so funny. Because it's like, you know, you're up in the front driving. You're not watching it, but you just hear one of the jokes and you start laughing, hitting the steering wheel. Yeah. And there's Rylan and I, literally 5 and 6, watching Christmas Vacation, understanding the humor at that age. And so it's just like, yeah, it's almost become a nostalgic, just,
yeah.
But it, you're right. It's still funny every single time I watch it, no matter what, especially when I'm with you or Rylan or someone else, or Paul, who gets the humor.
All right, so here we go. And by the way, Matt Wagner, another buddy of mine that's over in the UK, he and I are going to do an episode where we count down, like, or we're going to debate the best Christmas movies of all time.
Ooh, that's
so,
a good one.
So gun to your head, you have to name 5 Christmas movies that no Christmas season can go by without having seen. What are your 5?
Okay. Oh, I love this question. I'm going to say Christmas Vacation. That's my favorite. I declared that about 2 years ago because it was always a toss-up between it and Home Alone. I actually love Home Alone for some reason. It's one of my favorites. But I say Christmas Vacation. I'm going to say Home Alone. I don't know if I would choose 1 or 2. I actually, because I think I want to leave room for other movies. So I'm going to go with Home Alone 2.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
I'm going to go with Elf. You can't have Christmas without Elf. Agreed. I mean, that's I think that's America's favorite Christmas movie. Then I'm going to say Love Actually.
Yeah.
I love Love Actually. In my 5th, Christmas Story, Ralphie.
Oh, yeah.
We have to watch that. We watch that every year for 24 hours on, it starts, is it TBS? Is that where it's
It's either TBS or TNT.
Yeah, and it, like, I think 7 p.m. on Christmas Eve, they start playing A Christmas Story, and it runs for 24 hours over and over and over again. Until 7 o'clock on Christmas Day, and that it's not Christmas without that tradition.
No, it's always on the back. And whenever we're opening up our Santa or whatever on Christmas morning, it's always going to be on. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the Christmas that it was fuzzy? Like it didn't. Oh, I was
my God,
out in the yard, it climbing the fence, trying to get up on the cable line in my robe. Yes. I was just distraught.
Yes, so wires.
Oh, and then all it was a little booster. The guy comes out from Sunlink and just. It had come loose in the closet in the house.
Really? Did he come out on Christmas Day?
No, surely it was like not. A couple days later. I was like, are you freaking kidding me?
I do remember that. Did we end up just keeping it on the TV or did we play it like on DVD over and over again?
I think we just kept it on fuzzy.
Yeah, just, I think was so like, too. We would just take a break in between. We'd pause in between opening presents and just look at the TV
exactly.
In disgust.
And then BF making his usual comments. Yeah. Ralphie again. Like it's like every year it was a whole new thing to him that, BF is what we do. Every year we watch this over and over and over.
Yes. Well, speaking of Grandpa BF and Christmas, have you told them the story
of
Grandfather Must Go to Bed?
Well done. Way to bring. Okay, so.
They would like that.
So we had this house when Abby was, I don't know, you're probably what? 4 or 5 at the time, maybe?
Yeah, I was
pretty young. And so the house was set up in such a way that the girls' rooms were so far away. I mean, like a wing away. Now, I don't say that to think that we had some massive, like, no, but they were just, it was
the layout of the house was genuinely just long.
It was long and they were far away. So we still, even though they were older, just in case, kept the baby monitors going. And on this particular Christmas Eve, all of a sudden I hear crying from Abby's room. Like, what the heck? It's Christmas Eve. What is she crying about? So I walk in there and I check on her and I'm like, babe, what is going on? Well, her grandfather, BF, Bryn Frederick Aurelius, he was still up in the living room watching TV.
At like 3 a.m.
Yeah, on Christmas Eve.
Blasting the TV, lights on, everything.
And so tell them what your major concern was.
Well, as a firm believer in Santa Claus, I knew that he only comes when you're asleep. That's the rule. If you're awake on Christmas and you're out, and he was in the living room right by the tree, right where Santa comes down, he's right by the chimney. And I'd always been told, you know, you have to go to sleep in order for Santa to come. So I really thought that Santa would not come because Grandpa was occupying the entire living room and blasting, just being wide awake in the middle of the night, right when Santa's supposed to come. I mean, of course he's not going to come because he's supposed to be a secret. And so I really thought that we were going to wake up completely without Santa having visited.
Oh, all because of BF. Mm-hmm. And just having BF in the house was just interesting anyway.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
but you were convinced.
I was convinced. And the thing is thing about BF is that's so like him. I mean, and who knows when he was going to go to bed? It could be 8 a.m. I mean, who knows? And I just knew that's how he was. And, you know, so I was very concerned that, like, Santa wouldn't want to reveal himself because humans aren't supposed to see him. And so he just was going to skip our house. And so I guess, did you go in there and tell him to go to bed?
Yeah, I told him that, yeah, you got to get to bed. So he shuffled on upstairs and bedded down for the night, and Santa came and all was well with the world.
Yep. But
that's one of my favorite stories of all time. And all right, so bringing it back to Thanksgiving, because you are the Thanksgiving chef now. And so this is one of the things that's funny, guys. And here, if you ever just want to finally do something like this, because I know a lot of you out there, you struggle with where do we go, husband or wife's family or grandma's, what do we do on Thanksgiving? Well, about 3 years ago, Abigail just kind of threw down the gauntlet and said, we're staying home. I'm cooking. I'm controlling the menu. Yes. She went straight up menu Nazi, which I'm fine because you are an amazing cook.
Thank you.
What is on the menu for this year at the Ride household?
Okay. This year, I'm really excited about this year. One of my favorite things to make is my homemade mac and cheese. Every year I get most excited about making it because, one, it's my favorite food, and two, there's so many different variations that I love testing different versions of it. And I think I finally perfected my favorite recipe last year. I used Parmesan, Fontina, and white American cheese. And I figured out that's like the best combo. And so I'm excited to be making that this year. Also, I decided, I've never made this before, but I'm making bacon Brussels sprouts with blue cheese. We're doing bacon wrapped water chestnuts, which was Dad's idea, but that's going to be sort of like an appetizer. Obviously turkey, which Greenberg is in charge of that. Spicy corn casserole, mashed potatoes, creamed spinach. And this one's pretty fun and random. If you've ever been to like a Brazilian steakhouse, if you've ever been to Fogo de Chão or Texas Day Brazil, they have these, or just had, it's called Pão de Queijo, I think. I don't know how to pronounce it. I am so sorry for butchering that. But it's their authentic Brazilian cheese rolls made with Parmesan cheese, tapioca flour, olive oil, and milk, I think. And they make for the best, like, chewy, cheesy, like, they have the most confusing texture, but they're amazing. So I'll be making those for, like, the rolls. And I think that's it. And then, of course, Gemmelin's in charge of the pumpkin pie, where she literally buys a real pumpkin every year and boils it, and we make a pumpkin pie completely from scratch.
Which has been a total game changer.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like I wrote an article for the Vitruvian Letter that is about, I want to make that keto with, what's it called? The sugar substitute.
Oh, allulose.
Allulose. I want to try an allulose pumpkin pie, keto pumpkin pie, and compare it to the one that you guys make. I used to think that American pumpkin pie was probably like pizza.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. It's delicious, but it's very Americanized. Kind of fajitas. It's a total American thing. I just figured if you're going to make a pumpkin pie, it never really comes just from all natural ingredients, including a real pumpkin, that somehow it started in a can.
Mm-hmm.
Until you guys pulled that off, and it is stupid.
It is. It's definitely, I definitely recommend using a real pumpkin over canned pumpkin. It really makes a difference. It's almost like, I don't even know. Just the texture is just so much better.
It's light, creamy.
Yeah, it's very fresh and like it's not real dense.
Right.
It's just more like you said, like a light, fresh. I don't know. It's amazing. Definitely try it.
Yeah. No. It's so good. I cannot wait.
I know. I'm excited.
So okay. So your favorite? My favorite movies. My favorite movie of all time, Christmas or otherwise, is It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes. I know. So, I thought you were going to kill me for not saying that.
No. Because I force that down y'all's throat every year, Christmas Eve. That's our tradition.
Yes.
Whether you like it or not. Christmas Vacation, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Christmas Story. That one, definitely. Ralphie, Red Ryder, BB Gun. Man, then it gets tough because I want to say Love Actually, and then I want to say Home Alone, one or two. For me, it would probably still be one. The Family Stone,
that's a good one.
That movie is just so good. I love the everybody coming home. It's kind of like the adult version of a Hallmark movie.
Totally,
you know?
Yes, it's actually a really good storyline.
Right, right. I just really dig that movie. So I don't know how many I named. I think I named like 7. I don't know if I could. Those are going to have to be. And if I had to, if one of them is like, okay, you just got to do, it's for different reasons. So It's a Wonderful Life, it would probably be because it's just, I just feel like that's sacred.
Mm-hmm. The Christmas Eve tradition.
But for story, for one that just like, okay, if I'm feeling like crap, this is just bad. I can't believe, I mean, this is real time happening here. I think I'd probably throw on Elf.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good one.
It just, that you movie, if you cannot be in a good mood after watching that movie, there is something wrong with you.
Totally. No, that, yeah, Elf will never get old, no matter what. And you know what? It's another one that's really good that we haven't mentioned yet. Four Christmases.
Holy crap.
Yeah, see, that's yes. One of the, that one's just so funny. I just can't get over it. That, it might not be Christmas without Four Christmases.
Yeah. So good. What's your favorite scene in Four Christmases?
Oh, God. How do I even pick? First thing that comes to mind is when they go to his, I guess it's his dad's house with his brothers. And honestly, I really like when they just, you figure out that his name is Orlando. And his name's Orlando. And there's Denver and Dallas. And how, I guess it's Tim McGraw. And he goes, I'm Denver, or I don't know their names. He's like, I'm Denver, this is Dallas, and here, this is Orlando. He says to the dude's girlfriend, who she's been dating, quote-unquote, Orlando for years.
I'm Brad.
He's like, Brad.
My name's Brad.
And then when Vince Vaughn, when she, Reese Witherspoon, I forget her, Kate, I guess is her name in the movie, takes him into another room and goes, I can't believe I didn't know your name was Orlando. Like, how could you not tell me that? And he goes, what do you mean? What do you say? What do you say to somebody when you introduce yourself? Oh, my name used to be this, but now it's like whatever. The way he describes it is just so funny. He's like, you just say Brad. You just say my name's Brad. You don't say my name used to be asshole and now it's Brad. Yeah, you just say whatever he says.
My name is Brad.
Yeah. It's. Yeah.
And then probably that scene, my favorite part is whenever Robert Duvall, he's up there, boys, I don't mean to speak ill of your mother on Christmas, but she's just a common everyday street whore.
Yeah, she's nothing but a common street whore. Yes. It's just, and he's
nice,
like,
Dad.
He's like, Dad, and then he goes, what do you call a woman who runs away from her family, quits her career, and runs off with another man? And then he goes, she was a cashier. I don't think
that quite qualifies as a career. That's a job.
Yeah, that's a job. He's like, you didn't talk to her anymore.
And then I think that when Graham going to her house, Graham says she would like to orally pleasure Harold or whatever his name is.
Increase the frequency. Which I please whatever. What's it, Orville with my hand and mouth or whatever.
And then the best Vince Vaughn goes, Did she really just say? Did she just say that?
they just swiftly move on.
And then he goes, okay, Brad, what about you? He goes, well, I gotta follow Graham.
yeah, exactly.
Oh God, it's or, so great.
What about when they go to his mom's house? Oh, and oh, wow. The whole like how Brad's childhood best friend is now his dad. He's like, I'm not trying to be your dad. He's like, you were my friend. You're my best friend.
We smelt each other's hands.
Yeah, exactly. And then when they play the game, and I forget his name, but his brother that with like this all ripped and like whatever, he goes, flip the tube.
Yep. Flip the tube.
Flip the tube. As he's like chowing on wings. Like,
what's the one man that I'm allowed to have an affair with? John Grisham.
Yes. That's what she said.
Where am I not allowed to wear a mini skirt? NASCAR, I think.
Yeah, I forgot what it was, but oh my God.
Oh gosh. Oh, he said, what was it say? On the nightstand beside my bed.
Sock. Yeah. So bad.
I mean, that must be so fun to write that stuff.
I know. How do they not start laughing?
Tim McGraw was fat in that movie.
I know. I always thought that's what I mean, I've never really known what Tim McGraw looks like except for that movie. So that's the only image that I have of him in my head.
So John Favreau plays the brother that's flipped the tube. Okay. He and Vince Vaughn, their very first, I think it was their first movie, and definitely their first movie together, and what kind of launched them is Swingers. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you've got to watch Swingers. So Swingers is John Favreau, Vince Vaughn, and actually the guy that plays his best friend that's now married to his mom,
mm-hmm.
He's in there. He plays a guy named Sue. He's in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
There's several actors that have gone on to be really, really great now. But the main characters are John Favreau, who wrote Swingers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's also the one who wrote and directed Elf.
Oh, really?
Yes. The Doctor.
Cool. Yeah.
He
plays the Doctor. Yes.
He's the one. Yes. I think he wrote it. I know for sure he directed it. Also, Iron Man. He did the Iron Man series, but just John Favreau's just kind of crushed it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so that's what he and Vince Vaughn being in that movie together. It's funny, but you've got to watch Swingers, especially if, like, being your age, it's they're struggling actors. It's almost like a kind of like a fictional documentary of what they were really going through, that, like, struggling actors in Hollywood, and just some of the cliches mm-hmm. of the struggling actor trying to make it. It's so good. And so
good.
If you've ever heard "You're So Money, Baby," and you don't even know it.
Oh yeah.
That's from Swingers.
Oh, okay. I've totally heard that.
And that's the first movie where Vince Vaughn, you're just like, he was Vince Vaughn, and mm-hmm. you're like, oh my God, that dude's just like, cause he's like, look, hey baby, you're so money, you don't even know it. Like there's babies everywhere. And he's Vince Vaughn. And it's just like, wow, this dude is just, he's killing it. So yeah, you need to see Swingers.
Definitely.
Well, all right. So sounds like you got a good meal planned. And I think this was a fun little impromptu, just random holiday. This is the Jason Wright Show holiday special with Abby. We're going to have to do this again when Rylan comes in. Can you imagine how freaking nervous she would be?
Oh God, I don't know.
Might be a bit of a train wreck.
Yeah, literally. Rylan, she's known for when she has to give any type of presentation, like for a class, like she breaks out in a rash on her chest.
Yeah, she called me the other day.
And she's way more outgoing than me, and honestly a lot louder, and she's way more comfortable in like a crowd than I am. But for some reason, when it comes to like presenting or being in front of any kind of audience, she really freaks out.
I don't get it. I don't, because she is.
She's so funny.
Yeah, like, she's just the life of the party. And then, you know, her dad kind of likes to do public speaking, but I'm like, you know, you could ask me, I'll help you. I mean, she did that in high school. She had to sit down. And she's one of those that will just freaking all but
she
pass
did tell
out.
Her teacher, I can't do it. I can't give this presentation. Yeah. I can't do it.
Yeah. It's so weird. So I don't know if we'll be able to get her on there, but might have to get you back. And you're headed to California Friday.
Yes.
Black Friday traveling.
Oh, yeah.
I think that, you know what I just realized? So I think I've made my mind up. I'll take you to the airport early in the morning.
Okay.
And then I'm going to do my shopping, but I completely forgot that's Black Friday shopping.
Oh, God.
I'll be in the wiles of Dallas on Black Friday.
God, do you think the traffic's going to be bad? I didn't even think about it.
Not whenever we leave, because you got a freaking 8 o'clock flight. So.
Well, true, but don't people go crazy on Black Friday, start shopping at 5 in the morning? Yeah. It should be fun.
We'll just, we'll leave out the night before.
We'll write more Hallmark Christmas movies.
Oh, gosh, absolutely.
We get stuck in traffic.
Yeah, so what do you want for Christmas?
Oh, good question. It's been a hard, I mean, I have everything I want. I don't, and that's so freaking cliche, but each year it gets harder and harder, because you could decide to not give me one gift and I'd be happy just watching our movies, eating our good food, listening to Christmas music. But if I had to say, I'm asking for some Carhartt beanies.
Okay.
As random as that is, it gets cold in Boulder. I want some sweatpants.
Okay, what kind of sweatpants?
There's this brand on Revolve called Boys Lie. I don't know if you've heard of it, but they have funky, like fun sweatpants and sweatshirts and stuff.
There you go, dads. There's you some ideas. All right, what else?
Yeah. What else am I asking for? I really don't know. I kind of want a tea kettle, like the one I pointed out at Home Goods for my apartment.
Okay.
I always love mugs. I mean, you can't go wrong with getting me a mug. I mean, that... I will never not love a good mug. Or candles. I love candles.
Yeah.
I don't know. My Christmas list is kind of lame and basic this year, but I'm not asking for anything too specific.
I've got to get on my game with Jemlyn. I haven't got her anything. I mean, there's a couple of things I have to choose from, but she's pretty tough.
Mm-hmm.
And your daddy gift this year. So for the listening audience, mm-hmm. the girls get a daddy gift every year that has nothing to do with value. In fact, it's probably not going to be, it's never going to be your most expensive gift. Mm-hmm. It's always going to be something just totally random and just incredibly personal.
Yes.
And this one that I got, and it's always easier for you because you're like me, you're real deep and sentimental, and it's just, and I just know you really well. Mm-hmm. Yours is good. Ryland's is okay. It's not as good as last year's, which was the little Office, wind up music
cute.
Box.
That was cute.
Cool, because she and I share a love for the Office, but yours this year I really like.
Really? I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
Do you remember what you got me last year?
Oh gosh. Let me think. year your daddy gift?
Unless I'm thinking of the year, because I'm thinking of something specific that has to do with what we talked about. It might have been 2 years ago, actually.
What was it?
The collection of Christmas books by yes, Charles Dickens yes, and like right. other writers. But yeah,
that's right. That's right.
It's a really cool like collector's item.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I forgot about that. That is a good one. Mm-hmm. That is a good one. I'm going to pull that out and read some of those. You know, I haven't read any of Dickens since I was like really young. That'd be
me
fun.
Neither.
And one of the things that I'm going to read this holiday season, one of my favorite books. Have you ever read Wuthering Heights?
I haven't, but I need to. I obviously have heard tons about it. I feel great weird book. That I haven't read it, but yeah.
Great book. So I used to read it. And look, I totally ripped this off. There's somebody in a movie that says that they read Wuthering Heights every Christmas. And so I just kind of adopted that as like, maybe not at Christmas, but around the holiday season, mm-hmm. I read it. It's really, really good. So I think I'll read that. And of course I've got I've messed up. Like I told you again, I've got like 5 books going right now, including the freaking Napoleon biography.
Wow. That seems like something you need to tackle on its own.
Yeah. Use it as a doorstop.
Yeah.
So anyway. All right. Well, Goose, I appreciate you coming on the show and
I'm glad I walked into the house today.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's nice. And so to the Jason Wright Show audience, one of the reasons I did this is I'm in a good mood. I'm so thankful that Abby is here. I am so thankful for this show and for you listening. I'm so thankful that Ryland will be coming in from Tuscaloosa tomorrow. And it has been an incredible year for the Jason Wright Show. I'm glad that you've been on this journey with me and hope you enjoy this. I hope you and your family have an incredible, incredible Thanksgiving. Thank you so much. I'm out.